ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धामि भगवद्गीते भगवैषिणी. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 51. Buddhya Vishuddhaya Yuktaha, Buddhya Vishuddhaya Yuktaha. Trityatmanam niyamyacha, Trityatmanam niyamyacha, Shaddadin vishayans tyaktva, Shaddadin vishayans tyaktva, Ragadvaishav yudasyacha, Ragadvaishav yudasyacha. Buddhya vishuddhaya yuktaha, Dhritya Atmanam Niyanya Cha Shabdadin Vishayan Tyaktva Ragadvaisha Vyudasya Cha. If you remember, so in verse 50, Bhagavan asked Arjuna, said, Nibodhame, please understand me what I have to tell you now. And he says, this is what he's going to tell. He says, Siddhim Praptaha, for the one who has accomplished that Karma Yoga Buddhi. So that Siddhihi means the one who has accomplished that Antakarana Shuddhi. How does the person who has gained this Antakarana Shuddhi, how does that person obtain this Jnana Nishtha? Kind of the end of knowledge, which is Brahman, that Jnana Nishtha, which is Brahman. Let me explain that, samasena, in brief. So these next few verses really are focusing on Jnana Nishtha for the person who has Antakarana Shuddhi, who has been practicing Karma Yoga. So I'll be going through all of that, but this is really, it's for the sannyasi. The Karma Yogi will become a sannyasi. Buddha sannyasi or wearing the orange, they will become a sannyasi. Right? By Buddha or just by taking the cloth. Even if they take the cloth, the orange, they may be taking the cloth in order, out of commitment to gaining that Jnana Nishtha. Or they take the cloth, take the orange, because they've gained that Jnana Nishtha. So you can take sannyasa, be a karma yogi or a sannyasi lifestyle because of your commitment to gaining Jnana Nishtha. Or you can be a sannyasi who has gained Jnana Nishtha. In fact, you can be a karma yogi then we wouldn't call you a karma yogi, we'd say you have sannyasa by guna, by quality. So in the end, the Jnana Nishtha is really the one who has Sarva Karma Sannyasa. Sarva Karma Sannyasa, or say you would be by Guna Sannyasa, or having by Sannyasi by taking the cloth, you are, for somebody who has Jnana Nishtha, you are a Sarva Karma Sannyasi. Means for you, there's a renunciation of all karma. For there to be renunciation of all karma, you have to be Brahman. There's no way to renounce. You can't stop breathing, you can't stop eating, you can't stop walking, you can't stop talking. You're just a pile of karma. If you're in this creation, there's just endless karma going on. not just your ragged dvesha, just living itself, eating, taking a shower. All of these are actions. Sattva karma, sattva karma, so it's not freedom from all rituals. Sattva karma means all karma, all action, all kartritvam, all doership, all bhoktritvam, all enjoyership, all duality. So that person is a sattva, all karma sannyasi, someone who has renounced all karma. In that case, that sannyasa is jnanam, right? You are all already sattva karma sannyasis. You're all free of karma from the standpoint of the Atma. But to be a sattva karma sannyasi means you have knowledge. Knowledge of your own nature, which is free of karma. So here, that's why he says now, for the one who is siddhim praptaha, who has attained the siddhi of karma yoga, because that's what's been being worked on. The one who has that antikarana shuddhi, for that person, then what does he have to say? He says, buddhya vishuddhiya vishuddhiya yuktaha. Yuktaha, the one who is endowed with, means your buddhi, one who is endowed with a buddhi that is vishuddhi, a vishuddhi buddhi, means a buddhi that is pure. Pure means it's free of ajnanam, atma ajnanam, it's free of ignorance, and it's free of the raga dvesha that's born of that ignorance, as we'll see. So that buddhi that we gain through karma yoga, one of the main things we gain through karma yoga is recognizing this universe as dharma, as Ishwara, and Ishwara as an infinite expression of dharma. Dharma is like the bones of Ishwara. Right? The whole manifest creation, as is natural to itself, is dharma, is an expression of dharma. So Ishwara, the expression of Ishwara, the Ishwara Upadhi, as from its own standpoint, is just a manifestation of dharma. And so the karma yoga buddhi, in my Ishwara arpana buddhi, means my commitment, my worship of Ishwara, is really, how does that manifest? It manifests in my commitment to dharma. Because dharma is the natural unfolding of Ishwara, minus the jiva srishti. Right? The jiva srishti is either going along with dharma, and so therefore more or less invisible, because it's the one with Ishwara srishti, or it is going against. Right? The jiva srishti is going against dharma, creating all kinds of pain and misery for us. So my commitment is to the Ishwara srishti. Ishwara srishti is what is here right now happening before me. And in terms of this body, I am your servant. That's my edit. That's the karma yoga buddhi. I am your servant means to Ishwara. I am a servant of dharma. I am a servant of what is given to me to be done at this moment. Swamiji in his commentary says it this way, and Shankara says like this. And there's no, we'll see this later, this is a set of three verses. There's no, instead of the kartritvam, this doership, I am doing this and I am doing that. It's more as in this moment, this is what's given to me to be done. This body is given to me, the sense organs are given to me, the mind is given to me, the buddhi is given to me, the situation is given to me, and this is what is given to me to be done at this moment. That's the karma yoga buddhi. And so that in that commitment, the raga dveshas are neutralized, because I don't care about raga dveshas. I have viveka vairagya as a mamukshu, that discrimination, seeing the temporal nature of all of this, and searching for something that is real, having a vairagya for that is temporal, looking for what is real. That viveka vairagya is there. Raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes, let me have this to be happy, let me get rid of this to be happy. That's meaningless. From a moksha, that becomes meaningless because there's no ananda in it. Really, there's only dukkha in it. There's no resolve. To raga dvesha, there's no resolve. There's just moments of temporary relief couched in dukkha. It's dukkha getting to that moment of relief and dukkha when that moment of relief leaves. So, that's not my interest anymore. For a mumukshu. The mumukshu is the adhikari. The one who is qualified for this knowledge, by qualified, really what that means, not like getting a job, you're qualified for this. It means this knowledge is meaningful for you. That's the qualification, this knowledge is meaningful. It's not meaningful as long as what is ruling for you is raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes. Likes and dislikes means you're serious about it. I must have this to be happy, I have to get rid of that to be happy, and I have all kinds of different modifications of that and complexities around the raga dvesha. It's not just one raga dvesha. There's a nest, a web of raga dveshas that I'm trying to maneuver in for some moment of shanti. When I realize the limitations of that, raga dvesha are no longer primary for me. And so as I become a mumukshu and learn about that karma yoga buddhi, what becomes primary even before I learn that or as I learn it is really that let me be committed to Dharma. Let me be committed to Ishwara. And that's what really matters in terms of gaining the type of mind in a relative way that has shanti, relative shanti, and is available for this knowledge. And so for the one who has done this karma yoga, you know, really offering myself to Bhagawan, let me be here in the present and do what needs to be done. Which means in that Eka Shloki I said in the meditation, from the standpoint of this world, I am your servant. This body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of you, and it is you, in fact. You've given me all of this. It's nothing but you. Let me do what is to be done in this situation. That's that karma yoga buddhi. From my mind, my buddhi, from the standpoint of my mind, I am your bhakta. I am your devotee. I am the one whose whole commitment is to know you. To know you. To know who Ishwara is. To know myself. And then from the standpoint of myself, of this Atma, I am yourself. Yourself is me. The whole thing is given to Ishwara. It's given over to Ishwara till I recognize there's nothing but Ishwara. Ishwara includes all of us, all things, one Atma, one me, and all the entire creation resting in one me. The one me that all of us are meditating on. The one me that Dakshinamurti is meditating on, Jnaneshwari is meditating on, Ganesha is meditating on, all of the Devatas are meditating on, Ishwara, the Ishwara Swarupa is meditating on. Enjoying, take the infinite buddhi of Ishwara, the infinite upadhi of Ishwara, is just an expression of that one whole complete self, which is so simple, so pure, it is simply me. My own being. That's why when we do a meditation like this welcoming meditation, we're just welcoming, totally welcoming everything, no resistance. That's in a way, it's a mindfulness, but what's different, I mean, mindfulness is a beautiful thing. It means bringing everything to the present. When I bring something to the present, then I recognize my own being. Welcoming the totality of that experience that's happening in the present, recognizing it as Ishwara, letting my buddhi gently focus on my own presence, and then instead of having the ahankara with the buddhi focusing on my own presence, recognizing me. This is just simply me, abiding just as yourself. To be clear here, you have no problem just abiding as yourself if you take yourself to be the body, right? You can just be me. I can say, just sit here and just relax, just be yourself. Now what we're doing is some viveka, where I'm sitting here just being me, being the body that I am, the body-mind that I am. I'm just sitting here being me. But I've experienced some differentiation, some viveka. And now I'm recognizing that just being me is still just being me, but I've differentiated me, this very simple, beautiful self that I am. I've differentiated it from the body and the mind and the sense organs and all the experiences that I'm welcoming. I've differentiated me the same me, that when I say just relax as the body, just be yourself, the conscious being that you are, what happens is that very me, that most familiar me, is now differentiated from all of these objectifiable experiences, including the body and the mind and the sense organs and the emotions and the external perceptions. All of those are allowed to be. No need to push them away. Allow them to be. Totally welcome them so that there's no stress. So Swamiji says your heart and brain has to be as big as each one. It means there's nothing rejected. You allow them all to be, and you find that you're, because the agitation dissipates, your own being comes more to the surface, but it's not a new being. It's the being that you've always taken for granted has to be you. It's that very simple you that is Ishwara. There's not another Ishwara. There's not another big Brahman somewhere. It's this very simple you that you know so intimately, but always dressed by the body, mind, sense organs. Now you recognize that purity of yourself as you. So he says, with a mind, buddhya vishuddhiya yuktaha, endowed with a buddhi that is free. Vishuddhi means it's free of raga dvesha, it's free of the ajnana. It can just welcome everything and gently focus on my own being. It's awake to my own being. Right? So with that simple, pure mind that has been purified for some time, with that karma yoga and doing inner child work and all the variety of things that we know in order to resolve the pains of that mind, so endowed with that buddhi, and then dhritya atmanam niyamnicha, and then with conviction, dhriti, means dhriti is resolve or conviction, means that for you, there is nothing really more important than knowledge. What I'm doing is gaining nishta in my knowledge. And that's what I do. Remember, this is more or less for a sannyasi or for a karma yogi who's living in the world for whom this is primary. It's not that you don't have to work, or I mean, even a sannyasi has to go get his or her food, right? They have to build their shelter, they have to build their fire. They have to help others. They have to do things. They can't just sit there. They have responsibilities. Maybe small responsibilities, but they have things that have to be done. But everything that you do is a sadhana. Everything is just really for the sake of gaining nishta, gaining jnana nishta. So dhriti means with that resolve, with that commitment. It means it's not just, I'll do this today and I'll do something else tomorrow. Now the mumukshutvam is there. The mumukshutvam means you have understood without any doubt the viveka has been done. Without any doubt, you cannot fulfill yourself by your raga dvesha. By your likes and dislikes, there's no possibility of becoming a whole and complete being. You can fulfill the raga dveshas, but it doesn't give you what you're looking for. It gives you the object of the raga or the object of the dvesha, gets rid of certain things, and it makes you gain certain things. You're gaining the thing, but not gaining what you wanted to get from the thing. That is the problem. And so when that viveka vairagya is there, you become a mumukshu. It means a mumukshu, there's no turning back. If there's turning back, you're not a mumukshu. Mumukshu means you've realized. There's not a thing you can do to solve this problem in terms of gaining the wholeness that you seek from the world. There's many, many ways to be in the world to kind of lessen the burden of your raga dveshas. But there's no way to fulfill yourself by the fulfillment of your raga dveshas. That something is clear. That's what we mean by dhriti. There's a resolve. So dhritya, with that resolve, atmanam niyamya. Atmanam here is this, the mind. Niyamya, I control my mind. We'll see more about this later. I control my mind means the mind is an instrument for me, and my sense organs are instruments for me. My body is an instrument for me to make use of. It's not something that is running off with me. I have it as an instrument to utilize, to make use of, and I make use of it for the sake of gaining knowledge. So with resolve, I do the work that is necessary to bring my mind into Shanti, to have my mind in my hands. So if my mind is getting itself into trouble, it's in my hands. I can bring it home. I can take care of it. If my body is getting into some problem, I can bring it home. I can take care of it. It's my body. It's not that the body is ruling me, or my sense organs are ruling me, or my mind is ruling me. I'm the master of my body, just like they use the example of a chariot. Bhagavad Gita, I think it's mostly in chapter 6. The chariot, you know, they give the example of the buddhi being, say, the chariot driver is intoxicated. And so the horses are running wild, carrying the body of the chariot along with it. The reins are going crazy, the horses are going wild, and the self is getting bounced around in the back. And so you want the buddhi to be able to handle the horses of the sense organs and to handle the reins, to be able to pull the horses back, you know, to bring the horses to a stop, where you're the one who's utilizing these instruments. So with the conviction to now bring the body and the mind and the sense organs, and for us all this unconscious material, to do the work that needs to be done. You know, to have a conviction. They have the conviction to do that for the sake of jnana nishtha. Right? So that I don't have what we call this pratibandhika jnanam. So what happens? We gain knowledge, but the mind is running wild. Right? At the time of teaching, if you have a good teacher and there's some shraddha there and all those conditions are there, then Swamiji is the great grand master of this. The teacher can create an atmosphere where the mind is settled and quiet for that moment, and the knowledge gets poured in. You know? Like Swamiji is the grand master of making up his own jokes. So many jokes that are so funny. You know, he could be a comedian. He makes it up at just the right time and everybody's laughing and they have all of this antakarana shuddhi. The mind is filled with joy. You know, totally relaxed, totally full at that moment. Just perfect adhikaritvam for the moment. You know, and then gives them, makes you see. You know? But the problem, it's not a problem exactly, it allows you to see. But what gave you that moment of Shanti, you know, was, you know, Swamiji. He gave us the Shanti, you know, poured the knowledge in, and you see it clearly, and then you walk outside, and then that magic is gone, and the mind kind of closes over. That's fine. Those are pratibandhikas. That knowledge is there, but the mind has, pratibandhikas means there's obstructions. The obstructions have to do with unconscious material. It has to do with the way that we relate to the world, our raga dveshas, all of these attitudinal things, so many different things. And so there's all karma yoga and other things also are things that we learn, tools that we learn to try to bring the mind back into balance. And we do that vritti with it, resolve. For the sake of jnana nishtha, because why should my mind be behaving with this habitually. It's habitual behavior born of a jnana. So to end that habitual behavior, you know, I have to teach the mind. I have to give it some, I have to spend some time with it, you know, to let it learn. Okay, so what he says is bringing this mind back under my control with resolve. Resolve means really with love. This is what I'm doing. That's the dritti. That's the resolve. This is what I'm doing now. There's nothing else that matters. I'll do these other things because I have to make a living or whatever it is. But I use all that I'm doing just as a sadhana. Everything is for the sake of gaining this knowledge. So with that, then he says, with those things, so with this buddhi that has matured with the karma yoga, and with a resolve, having controlled my mind, bringing my mind into control with this resolve, then shabdadin vishayans tyaktva, giving up, abandoning all the sensory pursuits, shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha. Shabda is all the five sense objects, sound, shabda, sparsha, touch, rupa, form, rasa, taste, gandha, smell. These are the five sense objects. All of the vishayas, all of the sense, vishayas are sense objects. All of these sense objects means all of the things that can be perceived through my sense organs. Giving them up. Giving them up means not that you can turn your back on everything, it's just these are not the focus of my attention. I use the objects as I need them to take care of my body, to take care of my responsibilities. But giving them up, what? Raga dvesha vyudasyacha. Giving up these sensory pursuits and I can say, I'm going to give up these sensory pursuits, but I want them so badly. You know? But I'm going to hold out. I'm going to hold out, even though I have tremendous raga for these things. No. You give up the raga dvesha also. But giving up the raga and dvesha, your likes and dislikes, I need this to be happy. You can't sincerely do that without knowledge. You can decide that no sense pursuits for me, and then kind of hold your breath, you know. But unless you know that the source of the one and only source of ananda, every moment of joy, every moment of happiness, every moment of well-being has only one source. There's only one source of ananda, and that's your own being. There is a grand illusion going on, because the mind can gain moments of shanti when you fulfill desires. And everybody does it. Everybody fulfills desires, either getting rid of something or getting something that they want. And they have a moment of happiness. And so why wouldn't we think that fulfilling our desires gives us happiness? And so then, therefore, the happiness is superimposed on the object of desire. The whole world does that. Mm-hmm. Nobody's fulfilling a desire and becoming happy and looking at that object of happiness and thinking, that didn't really come from you, that's really my own being. That's not what's happening. That's not what people think there. And it's the wonderful thing, I mean, the interesting thing about it is that it's universal. Yeah. You know? Ajnanam, self-ignorance, is universal. Right? And so we're all in it together and we all validate each other's experience. But then one person over here and one person on the other side of the world and one person in the south and one person way up the north is thinking, yeah, but these experiences are not what they seem. They are not what they seem, because the object that is making me happy could be making another person at the same time miserable. And the object that's making me happy now could make me miserable the next day. And the next day or the next month, I could be totally neutral toward it and not care about it at all. And so actually, that's true with all objects, with all experiences. I start to realize that. Which means what? That I experience happiness, yes, but it doesn't have anything to do with the object. There must be something else involved. That's the level I have to go. I can't just say I'm giving up raga dveshas. I'm giving up all my likes and dislikes. I'm giving up all sense pursuit. I'm going to give up all sense pursuit. But I have to be able to give up the raga dvesha. To give up the raga dvesha, you have to see, you have to recognize that these sense objects seem to give happiness, but it has got to be an illusion, logically. It's illusory. And I know it's illusory because I watched this ananda, if you've ever been in love and then fallen out of love, where you watch this tremendous love one moment just drip off the person. It's not there anymore. person is there? Not the love. Or somebody you are so in love with, now you dislike. Yeah. Doesn't have to be a person, it can be anything. And so when I discover, as a mumukshu, who's been exposed to this teaching, because Krishna is talking to somebody, Arjuna, who is being taught, right? I start to recognize the source of ananda has nothing to do with samsara. It has nothing to do with maya. It has to do with my own swarupa, and it's never not there. I'm being fooled by shantavrittis that I gain through many different ways. One of the most primary is fulfilling a desire, but actually going to bed at night, going to sleep, waking up in the morning, you know, listening to beautiful music, walking in nature, being with my animal, being with my child. There's so many different experiences that bring about that shanti that gives me a sense of peace. But for a jnani, you don't need the circuitous route. You don't need to go out here to have this experience so that you can have a shantavritti, so that the self, which you don't know about, can be manifest in your mind. For the jnani, the mind is abiding in the atma as the very source of ananda. See what I mean? So for the mumukshu, for the jnani, for the sannyasi, that sannyasi, either as a having jnana nishtha or having completed that karma yoga, buddhi has been completed, the mind has been brought under their control, all of these sense pursuits are given up along with the raga dvesha. Given up means that they're not what you're about. They can be there, they cannot be there, but I can happily experience the fruits of these pursuits, or I can be happy when they don't work out also. My ananda, my commitment is not there. My commitment is to atma-jnana and to jnana-nishtha. So, that's what that verse is. This verse is actually a set of three, but we'll do the next two next week, and probably the 54 also for lucky. Om Swasti Prajabhya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishah Go Brahmane Vyashudamasti Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshati Parajanyah Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Barahitah Brahmana santi nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santi niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sukhamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amatam gamaya Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Namaha.
Hari Om.
So what qualifies something to be a Shantavritti?
Shantavritti means the vritti. Well, I like the example of, you know, the water bucket. If you have a clear water bucket, a muddy water agitated water bucket, and a clear water bucket. When the water bucket is clear, it can still be reflecting, like, the clouds and maybe the trees and the mountains around it. But the sun is manifest in that vritti, in that water, true to form. And so here, when we have a shanta vritti, your own presence is not in competition with emotional agitations or frustrations. You know, the experiences that are the sense perception is providing, or the thoughts that are going through the mind are in no way disturbing the dominance of your own being. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Voilà. Doing your own fulfilling your own dharma is like following that which you follow the nose, right?
Well, in a sense, yeah. What is, if you have some shraddha, I'm saying that means there's some sort of faith pending understanding. Because until you kind of get used to it, this world is Ishvara. And you think that kartritvam, that doership, is so much there that you think always worried about you having to decide, and there's a lot of overthinking going on, and a lot of projecting into the future and thinking you blew it in the past and all of these type of things. That's all jiva srishti. So the mind is lost, totally lost in that jiva srishti, and the emotional life that's creating, that's where we're living. So to get kind of into your own prarabdha, your own dharma, really, you have to just bring your mind back to the present and say, okay, what is being asked of me right now? What is my job right now? That doesn't mean that your job, I mean, what is being asked of you right now, it can involve some planning, it can involve doing your taxes, it can do whatever the responsibilities and decisions that have to be made now. They're the decisions that have to be made now are usually very, very easy, but because by the time the decision is there to be, it's time for it to be made, it's kind of obvious what that decision will be. The problem is we see these things out in the future. And so we're worried, and what is going to happen, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, it's not time for you to know. If you don't know what you're going to do, it's probably not time for you to know. You have to be a little patient. So it's bringing your mind to the present and doing here what is to be done right now. And that's a beautiful exercise. It's really, instead of thinking that you are creating the situation, thinking of it more as responding to the situation. Because if you really think about this, anyway, the situation is here to be responded to. Because otherwise we think we have to create it, and what we want to create isn't here right now. See what I mean? So we don't think about what's here right now, we think what we have to create. And so we miss what's here right now, but really right now, so we're to be in the present, we're being, you know, what's being asked of us now? And it's extraordinarily simple and profound. I know I've told this story so many times, but to me, you know, there's certain stories that are just make your life in one way or another. And for me, it was when one especially important story when Swamiji said, you know, I just do what is in front of me to be done, to the best of my ability. What is here now in front of me to be done to the best of my ability. And then he said, and that's all. That's what it is. And for me, as time goes on, and that becomes my more and more my reality, as it is for all of us, you know, I see that's what it is. And that's that Ishvara Arpana Bhuti. I do what's being asked of me to do. That's my prarabdha, that's my life. And it's not the... We think that we're the creator of all of these things that happen to us. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why maybe I'm thinking we'll do Kena Upanishad next. Because in the Kena Upanishad, one of the stories, I think it's in the third chapter, you know, all of the devatas have just won a big war. Indra at the top, they've won a big war against the Asuras. And they are puffed up completely. They're so elated, so proud of themselves, patting themselves on the back and all of this, you know. And very, very pleased with themselves. And so Ishvara thinks, well, I need to give them a little reality check there. You know? And so he has Uma, the goddess of knowledge, call them one by one. They call Agni and Vayu, and then finally Indra to come. They call Vayu, the god of wind. And I think Uma gives him a little piece of straw and says, let me see you blow this straw away. Lord Vayu, the god of wind. So, fire. Of course. And he blows and blows and blows, and nothing happens to the straw. And then he humbly goes away, and then Agni comes, and she gives him a little bit of a wood to burn, you know, some twigs to burn. Let me see you burn these twigs. Of course. And he goes to try to burn and burn, but nothing at all happens at all. Then Indra comes, who's the king of the devas. And she asks Indra to do something, and he can't do it. And then he just realizes in pranams. And then they kind of all realize that that they actually, that it's not them that is the doer. And so they go back humbly. And the story goes on. That's something like that. Yeah.
Well, who's the doer then? Is that Ishvara?
That's all Ishvara.
Mm.
Your life is, that's why, you know, if you do, that's what you're saying, Peter, you know, it's better, and what Bhagavan just said several verses ago, you're much better to do your own karma, your own dharma poorly, than to do somebody else's dharma well. If you're trying to do somebody else's dharma, you're out of your own prarabdha trying to make that work. It doesn't really feel very good, because you're out of sync. So it's better to be present to your life. To be present to your life and to do your dharma, do the things that are being asked of you. Now, it's not about raga dvesha. You don't need raga dvesha when you are the source of the ananda. Raga dvesha is meaningless. What you need is a mind that has shanti and can enjoy your knowledge. Why is raga dvesha? What's the use of it? If there really was some ananda out there for you to achieve, then it's different. We're all going to be using our raga dvesha like crazy, going after these things, because there's actually something, there's some ananda out there for you to get. But you're trying to get the object because you think there's ananda in it. You're not trying to get the object because you want the object. You want the object because the object will make you happy. You want the situation because the situation will make you happy. Or you don't need any of that. You have the prarabdha, which gives you the situation, and your mind and the ananda is there. There's no distance between the ananda and you. You are the ananda. There's no distance between the buddhi and the ananda. There's just some unfortunate ignorance, agnana, that needs to be removed. That's it. And so if the mind, these things like this karma yoga buddhi and, you know, you're having your commitment to dharma, as you gain knowledge, is a profound sadhana because it works. It's not like you practice this karma yoga buddhi or commitment to dharma, you know, over raga dvesha, and you're suffering all along the way. It's the as you do that, there is ananda. As your mind settles down, there's ananda. The mind naturally enjoys ananda because of its shanti. It can enjoy ananda. It can also be miserable. Right? Depending upon the pressure in the mind, the pressure and the stress in the mind. But for jnani, just to take it one more level, as you recognize the wholeness of your own being, whether the mind has shanti or it has agitation, all of it's taking place in the wholeness of your being, which is inviolate. And so the mind, the buddhi, learns to take refuge. That's why I say your atma, yourself, is a sharana. Sharana means refuge. It is a refuge. The buddhi resolves itself. You know, satyam nitya, the buddhi resolves itself in the wholeness of your being. It is its refuge. And that refuge is never away from it, so it's never without that refuge. Right? And so abiding in that, it can be with Ishwara. Be with Ishwara. This is Ishwara. And take that position of let me do what is to be done. That's what I do. Let me just do what is to be done.
I totally get that. And then saying that Ishwara is a doer, that throws me.
It's not, there's no doer really.
Okay.
But all that's meant there is your prarabdha itself is unfolding as Ishwara. So the prarabdha karma is what is bringing all of these situations about. It's not you as a jiva who is the creator of all of these situations. The situations belong to Ishwara. There's no doership in Ishwara. It's just, I was talking about the progression of your prarabdha karma belongs to Ishwara, not, and you are included in that. This body-mind-sense organs is included in Ishwara's story. See what I mean? And so, best way for you to be is to relax into the story and do what is asked of you. Why we even say it like that is because for the mamokshu, as you're gaining knowledge, there needs to be a neutralization of this raga dvesha and this doership. I have to do this, I have to do that, I'm the one who's making my life. You know, I'm the one who's victorious, I'm the one who's the failure, all of this type of stuff. That's why in the King of Upanishad, with that story, he had to show all of these great devatas that actually that Agni can burn fire is because of the laws, not because of Agni. Agni thinks that he's the one that burns because of him. He's responsible for the burning. No, fire and wind and all of these things are part of my being, part of the creation. You're not the karta.
So, in the commentary in verse 50, it's quite a long one, and looking on that in page 323 and 324, Swamiji talks about that the under the heading that the Atma is neither accomplished nor given up, he talks about that we don't have to either give up the Ahankara either. That really is one with the Atma. So there's
yes.
No need to give it up. And I just happened to be noticing...
You have to know what he means by that, though. Go ahead.
In the Vedika Chudmani?
Chudamani.
Yeah. That around verse 300, there's about 15 verses where they're talking about the Ahankara as being vile and must be annihilated, completely gotten rid of, smashed, end of story. Well, that's what it says. It's
yeah.
A snake. It's horrible. It must be totally annihilated. So that seems to be comfort to not giving up.
I'll have to go through and find those verses.
Right
up
here. I don't have all of them. There's about, I think, 17 or 15 of them that talk about destruction of the Ahamkara or getting rid of it.
Mr. Swamiji's commentary?
No,
this is just the translation. I mean, it's just the Sanskrit is there.
I have a better, like when he's saying annihilated, their verb is vinasha. And nisheshatiya, in the total destruction, removal, you know, destruction in the total removal of the ahankara, you know, then the brahmatma bhava is there, pratibandha shunyaha, which is completely unobstructed. That's what it says. So there's a style to the way this translator is using the language. But here, the ahankara, when we're talking about ahankara, in this way, the annihilation of the ahankara is only through knowledge, right? Because the ahankara and the annihilation or destruction of the ahankara is the destruction of the ajnana that causes the ahankara. Now, the ahankara is half correct. Aham means I, right? Kara means making of the I. Means the aham is superimposed on an upadhi, right? And say the body is an upadhi, so the aham, Brahman, becomes this upadhi, this body. This body is subject to death, illness, decay, etc. The mind, the ahankara is the aham, the atman, this very simple self that I've always taken to be me, but with the ahankara is superimposed on the mind that is subject to grief and sadness and despair and hatred and lust, etc. All of these type of negative along with the positive. So all of these things that are the cause for suffering become attributes to me because of the ajnanam that gives birth to the ahankara. And so what Swamiji says is you don't have to give up the ahankara. All you have to do is gain knowledge and the ahankara is destroyed. The ahankara is destroyed by knowledge, but the self of the ahankara remains. Because the aham, even now, for an ajnani, when you say I, that I is landing on Brahman, on your being. And then because of self-ignorance, is superimposed on the body, mind, sense, organs, in the upadhi. Right? But the ahankara is still labeling you. And then with ignorance, it kind of lassoes the body or mind, sense, organs, in the upadhi. So how can you give up the ahankara? You're going to give up the I? You're not going to give up the I. You're going to keep the I, but you're going to remove the ignorance that takes the ahankara, the kara, off of the aham, just leaving you. In fact, you can't give up the ahankara. The ahankara falls with knowledge.
So in fact, like the reassignment of the I, then?
The appropriate assignment with the I. You have to remember that I think this is critical to really understanding it. The ahankara is 50% correct. It is properly labeling you, and then, because of ajnanam, taking this me, that is Brahman, to be this body. That's what we call the superimposition.
But the body going with these kind of changes, ups and downs.
It all goes on with all kinds of changes, but these changes, the mind gains much more shanti as the mind discovers your own being, which is absolute shanti. Your own nature, the you, the me that you are, is absolute shanti. It's not relative shanti. And that absolute shanti is ever present. Right? So, one thing I might, and we can talk about this later, but I have better translations. The translation is really important. And also that translation of these Sanskrit terms.
Well, it's kind of a faulty translation, right?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Well, the thing is, it's hard to do an English translation. It's very hard to do. And so, say if you're a teacher, whatever term you use, whether you use destruction, that's a hard term, vinasha, destruction, absolute vinasha, this particular, here it's not probably not absolute, it's vishesha, vishesha, nasha. Means it's a particular type of destruction. The vishesha means particular type of destruction. The destruction born of knowledge. Okay? But then if the destruction is born of knowledge, But remove means the removal of ignorance. There's actually nothing for you to do and nothing you can do.
Mm.
There's something that you can know. Just think about how are you, no knowledge, how are you going to destroy it? That seems like very, very a destructive, violent act. I don't know how you would destroy it.
Well, you'd be a vegetable or something.
Yeah.
Plus the one who's trying to destroy it
is the
one that's trying to be destroyed, right? So
destroy yourself.
You're only affirming the one.
Yeah.
Right?
There's another really beautiful book. It's 100. The Viveka Chudamani is repetitive. Like it has certain riffs that repeat themselves. So what we think is that it was probably a compilation of a lot of different texts or parts of texts. And that's why you can actually teach a section of it and that's fine. And that section will probably repeat in different ways. And so what Swamiji did at one point is pick out a thread of 100 verses that take you through the whole. And there's a pretty nice commentary on it too. It might be better.
From him.
Yeah.
So that would be another question.
Yeah.
Right, so I think, if I'm not mistaken, have you said that the self or conscious or I is not a knower?
Yes.
Okay, so that in on page 329,
let me see.
First sentence of the first paragraph.
Okay. If there is someone to whom consciousness is unknown, that person has to be inert. And if he is...
The first sentence of the third paragraph.
Oh, sorry. Thus, since consciousness is always present, so also Shankara says, is the knower. In the one who wants to know something, consciousness is already present as a knower. Then, in order to know a given object, he employs an appropriate means of knowledge. Suppose you have to see a form or a color, what do? You do not close your eyes and try to see the color through your ear. You always open your eyes because you know that the eyes are the appropriate means of knowledge here. Who is the person that handles the means of knowledge? It is the knower, jñāta. Jñāta means knower from jñātra, in whom consciousness is present. Thus the knower also is not unknown but present, prasiddha. Nobody finds it necessary to use a means of knowledge to discover the knower because it is never absent when there is something to be known. Consciousness assumes the status of a knower with reference to an object to be known and then therefore becomes, as it were, the knower. Yeah, this
as it were.
As it were. It's finally in the end. So this can be a little bit misleading. But how you have to understand this, let's see if I can go through. There are some people who believe that there is a super consciousness beyond body-mind-sense complex and are searching for it in all seriousness. They will be searching for eternity and still missing it because the one who is searching is the only consciousness there is. Therefore, because consciousness does not become the object of a desire to know, it is totally self-evident. There's a key. There is no living being to whom consciousness is not present. Even a mosquito is aware of itself. It may not know the word mosquito, but it is able to recognize other mosquitoes, even though there are so many insects of the size of a mosquito. To that extent, it is self-conscious. Thus, since consciousness is always present, so also Shankara says, is the knower. Consciousness is always present in the buddhi. And because consciousness is the buddhi, with the buddhi, there is knowership. But the buddhi, the mind, the sense organs, the body, are all objectifiable. But when you objectify the buddhi, which would mean like this, every thought you have, every knower known experience you have, is objectifiable. So both the knower and the known are objectifiable. If you, through viveka, discriminate between the subject and the object, the knower, buddhi, the emoter, the knower, the emotions, the perceptions, all of the sense organs, all of these things that are necessary for knower-known relationship within samsara are objectifiable. Okay? And they change and they come and go. Consciousness is ever present. But consciousness without the buddhi, How is that a knower? Consciousness without the buddhi or the sense organs, the vehicle for knowership or the instrument for knowership is not there. And so all you have there is consciousness. And so when you differentiate, you can see this, like say if you do japa, for instance, it's good, but even in meditation, you objectify your mind, you let all of the thoughts come, whatever is coming, and then turn the buddhi just toward your being, and see if your being itself simply is self-evident, self-shining, or if it is performing an act of knowing. And what you see is it's not performing any act at all. Even right now you can recognize. Your being is there, consciousness is there, but it's not doing anything.
But it's known.
It is known because it's self-evident, because it's consciousness.
But if you objectify your mind, or buddhi, who's doing the objectification? Is the buddhi objectifying itself?
Well, the buddhi itself is sattva, so it's going to reflect consciousness. It's always objectified. The instrument, the one that does the knowing, is itself objectified. It's just like the eyes that do the seeing are also seen. We take them to be the seer, but then we recognize that through the mind they are seen. Right? So it's like the instrument is both the seer and the seen.
Right, but the buck has to stop somewhere. It's not an infinite regress. So if the mind,
it stops with consciousness.
But it's not knowing anything. So if there's going to be something objectified, there has to be an objectifier. So if the buddhi is being objectified, who or what is objectifying it?
You would say that the... Okay, what if I go like this, because I don't quite accept that, what you're saying. So say if I had... to use an example, like if I hold a mirror up and a rock up to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The sun is existing there as though in the mirror. So the mirror becomes, we could say, luminous, and then can reflect things. That's what we mean by sattva. But there's nobody objectifying anything. It's the very material of the buddhi that makes it objectified. There's not an act of objectification, there's the fact of objectification. Like, what if I use the example, say, the sun illumines everything by its nature, everything is illumined. By its nature, everything is objectified. But there's nobody objectifying, that's just the fact of what they are objectified without an objectifier.
Okay.
You sure?
Well, not really.
Well, contemplate on, and we'll talk about it later.
All right. It's helpful.
Yeah.
Could you unfold a little bit about the word ahamkara? You know, the aham is me. That's easy.
Mm-hmm.
But then what does kara mean?
It comes from the root kriya, to do or to make. So the ahankara is like the manufacturing of an I. So say if you say you have consciousness, which is just, if I say aham, the I, I'm not manufacturing it, the word aham lands on what is the I, actually. Like here, the word lamp brings to mind the lamp. This lamp is the word for this, okay? But I is really not this body. So because of ignorance, this is manufactured. This is a manufactured I, manufactured out of ignorance. So this I, the I that is really the Atma, which is Brahman, that I, because of self-ignorance, is superimposed on this body. So it's an I created out of ignorance. The I is correct, right? The aham is correct, but then that aham is pasted onto the body, right? As though. Or the eye is now labeling the mind because of ignorance. It's not correct. It's a created eye. That eye concept is now given to the body or to the mind or to the emotions or whatever. Can take the eye. Your sense organs take the eye, the body takes the eye, the buddhi takes the eye, the manas, all of the thoughts in the mind and emotions take the eye. So it's a made eye, it's a created eye.
So what should you think if you have a created eye, an emotion?
No, it's when you say the emotion, it would be, you usually don't say I'm this emotion, you say I'm sad or unhappy or identify with the emotion.
Uh-huh.
And say when you gain knowledge, that emotion is there. It's not that it's not there. Whatever emotion is there. But that that emotion is illumined by your being. Right? It's not you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You are there as the luminary, the consciousness which lights up that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But you can now have viveka between the emotion or the thought or the perception and your own presence, which is stable and free of that emotion.
Mm-hmm. So you simultaneously kind of know both in it.
Yeah, yourself is self-evident.
Yeah.
You know?
So the kara part of ahankara is kind of like the false attribution. Rather than the self-existing I,
yeah.
There's a false attribution of I on that which is not the I.
Yeah, mm-hmm. On the upadhi. What upadhi means is anything that can take the I, take the atma. Anything that I can misidentify myself. The Atma with is an upadhi. Sometimes it's translated as conditioning adjunct. So this body functions as an upadhi, the mind and emotions as an upadhi, the sense organs as an upadhi. Yeah.
So some people believe that I am a soul or spirit. Is that another one of these misidentifications?
Well, then you would probably be identifying with the sukshma sharira,
right.
The subtle body, yeah.
Well, some people think that they're prana or chi, so that would be another way to do it.
Mm-hmm. If you say, I am the prana,
mm-hmm.
Then that's the ahankara. Because you're identifying with something which is superimposed, the aham is superimposed on you. Sukshma Sharira enjoys consciousness as long as it's there, you know, taking birth after birth after birth. But it belongs to maya. It's a sattva that reflects the consciousness in it. See, just another thing about your question. The buddhi is the one in the whole antikarana system. The buddhi is the intellect. It's the one that gains knowledge, the one that has clarity. Okay, that's the function of the buddhi. But now, and the ahankara is often put in the buddhi, because the ahankara is the one that says, I know this, I know that, but the ahankara can stand alone also. That's what it's for. Ahankara, buddhi, manas, and citta. You can say the buddhi is the one who has clear knowledge and can say, I know that. So now we have I know. The I is now the knower. If I say I know, then I am the knower of this object of knowledge. And then it can also talk about the function of knowing the object. I am the knower of this known object. Now the thing is, so that's a function of the buddhi, and it takes on the knowership. Consciousness, it can't take on that knowership without consciousness, it would be inert. But consciousness is manifest in the buddhi is sattva. But the knowership, the use of viveka, of discrimination, the vairagya, all of the qualities of the jiva, good and bad, all of their capacities, all of those are known. The knowership is known. And the knower is known, the known is known. Both knower and known are known. You are aware, the consciousness illumines the knowership of the buddhi, the knowership function. It illumines the fluctuating mind of the manas. It illumines the memory. It illumines the ahankara that takes credit for all of that. The ahankara comes in, the knowledge takes place in the buddhi. The ahankara says, I am the knower. I have clear knowledge of this. All of that is known. It's known because of the self-evident Atma. So the buck stops at the self-evident Atma. Now, if you really do this viveka, in terms of all of your experience, what is known through your sense perception, like this room, what you're looking at, hearing, feeling, your five sense organs, are giving a perception of vritti of this room. Right? And you... In reality, what is happening right now in terms of this room is known. Okay, and you can say, well, it's known because my eyes see it and my ears hear it. You're saying that, right? That we know the eyes are the instrument of being able to see it. My ears are the instrument for being able to hear it. But experientially, the fact is that the room is known. Now you say, yeah, but it's known through my sense organs. Sure, that's true. The sense organs are also known, right? And then you can say, yeah, the sense organs are known because of the mind. True. The mind using the sense organs knows these objects. So it's because of the mind that these sense organs are known. True. The mind is also known. It means whatever thought is there. You can say, well, the buddhi really, if you look at the mind as just giving fluctuating thoughts and perceptions and all that, the buddhi is the one who comments on those thoughts, organizes them, etc. Say, okay, true. The buddhi is also known, right? Whatever it's doing, that is known. Whatever the ahankara does, that is known. Then you could say, the atma itself is known. That's where the buck stops. There's nothing behind the atma. The atma is known because it's self-evident. Right? So all the way, the whole experience from the most remote known to the innermost known, the only experience you're actually having is known. And then you attribute the reasons for the is-knownness to the sense organs, to the mind, to the buddhi. But actually, in the end of your analysis, the reason for the is-knownness is the self-evident atma. And the atma itself is not a knower, nor do you experience any knower anywhere along the way. All you actually experience is is-knownness. And then we attribute a reason for that is-knownness to the buddhi, to the manas, to the sense organs, to the atma itself. But actually, there is no knower. There's just self-evident is-knownness, which is manifest throughout. And then you give credit to the different instruments for being responsible for that. We say, okay, that's fine, but there's no experience of a knower. You say it's through the sense organs that these things are known, or through the mind this is known. The ahankara attributes, creates a knower. Well, we'll stop it here. This buddhi is doing this and that, knows this and that. It's the knower. But everything about the buddhi is only known. Experientially, you have to analyze your experience like that and try to find the knower. All you'll find is knownness. Knownness is the atma.
Will you make that this is known, or the knownness is there with a knowership? Or
no.
Without a
knowership?
There's
no knower. Get rid of the whole universe, and what is left is the is-known atma, the self-evident atma. Mm-hmm. We create, the ahankara creates the knowership by attributing the reason for this thing being known is the buddhi. So in language we say the buddhi is the knower, this is known. Because of the buddhi, this is known, so the buddhi is the knower. You can say the buddhi is the vehicle for that particular knowledge, but there is no experience of knowership, there's an experience of it being known.
So knowership is just a subset of false doership then?
It is. False knowership.
Yes, it's
it's language.
Part of the doing.
Yeah,
it's
happening.
Language.
Yeah.
How do you define the citta now?
If we use, do you mean like in as a member of the four?
Yeah.
The citta is the memory.
Uh-huh.
So whenever we pull in a thought that we've had before,
okay,
that's citta. And if we want to get into psychology, maybe we can put unconscious material in the citta also. We have to decide where to put that, since they're not putting it anywhere themselves.
As all four means Satchitananda?
No. Chitta, so we have the ahankara, the I notion, the buddhi, the intellect, manas, the negative emotions, fluctuating mind, and then the chitta, the memory.
Wouldn't they hold the unconscious as equivalent to vasanas or samskaras?
Yeah, but vasanas and samskaras are the actual impressions. And so where do those, is there a little,
your storehouse,
is there a storehouse for those impressions, you know?
Isn't it called the Kamachaya? But I asked you that before.
Kamachaya, is that a Buddhist term?
Well, I saw that's a Vedanti term too.
If it is, it's not a common one.
Okay, Buddhist.
Chaya means storage and karma.
No,
it's
storage. Chaya. Chaya, if they're saying that, chaya can mean shadow or umbrella of desire, karma, chaya. I have to look it up because I don't know that Swamiji's used that term.
No, not Swamiji. I know it from heart. He has used it.
I wonder if it's an Ayurvedic term. He used it in Vedanta?
Well, I mean, that's kind of where he was, you know, coming from. So that's
his... Well,
I don't know the Yoga Sutras. If it appears in the Yoga Sutras, I don't know.
I can probably look it up. You have to remind me. I'll get into the dictionary. And
I can research
it. The problem for me, like, you have to tell me the spelling of chaya. Is it cha or cha? Yeah. Kama is
it's
desire.
C-H.
Is it CH? Is that proper? That's, but if they use, it depends on if they're using real transliteration or just regular CH for cha.
No,
sound.
I look it up.
Yeah. Then I can tell you. I can easily find it.
Would be interesting.
Yeah. Do you know how?
I've never heard that before. So I don't think it's Buddhist.
No, it's not.
No, you would know.
He uses it in the Vedic astrology and the Jyotisha
classes.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it can also come straight out of Jyotish.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what Jackie was just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where he's using it.
Yeah, so it's a Jyotish term.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's...
You don't think so?
I actually have a feeling it's not just a Jyotish term, but...
Well, let me see if I can find it.
But there are people we can always talk to.
Yeah.
To get more information about that. I guess the Sanskrit spelling would be the solution.
It would be. Let me get, if it was... Alright, well, it's not, there's Kamachara, but not Kamachaya here. Let me just look at something. So it's not going to be kind of a common compound. You know what I mean? If it was a common compound, it would be here. That doesn't mean it's not a word, it's just, it's not that well known. Let me look here.
I don't think it's a shadow.
It's probably not umbrella either. Chaya might be in body also, just a minute.
It's okay, I'll look it up.
No, I know.
I know,
you already got me in here.
Now it's hard to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's not. Let me try one more thing. See, yeah, chaya, so this is probably what it is. Chaya means shade or shadow.
I know you.
A reflected image, a reflection, a likeness, a shadowy fancy, hallucination. Maybe that's what it is.
He's referring to it as part of the mind.
But did he always refer to it as a storehouse, actually?
As a storehouse?
Yeah, as a storage, you know, of commerce. And so.
Yeah, but
it's kind of where the Vasana is.
The Jyotish, famous Jyotish
teacher.
He called it Sanchita.
Sanchita is,
well.
But Sanchita is storehouse.
Yeah,
he talked about that one. As the whole thing was from which the front is chosen trees, chosen.
Yeah.
Okay, you have to find out from here.
What is it?
and let us know.
Yeah, because now we're all...
Sanchitta is not the same.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I know what sanchitta is. Sanchitta is like all the karmas that have not manifest.
Yeah.
That's sanchitta.
That's what he also referred to.
Okay, but this
is a
kamachaya. You just have to ask him.
It's a faculty, you know, just like chitta or ahankara. Do you remember that, Deborah?
Right.
No. I need to look it up.
I'll look
at
my notes.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
And that's we can always stay in my water.
Yeah.
Okay.